I'm Dennis O'Hare.
And I'm Jim Burris, in for Rose Scott, who has a few days off. Earlier this week in Boston, a suspect was killed by law enforcement after they approached him to find out if he was planning attacks inspired by ISIS. Reports then surfaced that one of his motives was to fight for the imposition of Sharia law. Some state legislatures, including Georgia, have seen the introduction of bans on Sharia law in recent years. A Georgia proposal to ban the implementation of, quote, any foreign laws failed in 2014, and it does not appear to have resurfaced.
But what is Islamic law, or is it sometimes called Sharia law, and why do some perceive it to be such a threat? Well, that's what Emory School of Law professor Abdullahi Ahmed Abdullahi Ahmed An-Naim is trying to answer. He is the founder of a blog called The Future of Sharia, where he calls for debate among Muslims and others, too, about the relationship between Islam and the state. Professor An-Naim, thanks so much for being with us. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
One thing that comes up right away is I think a lot of non-Muslims, particularly in the political realm, tend to look at Islamic law, particularly as it is put forth by folks in sort of with extremist views, and say, oh, it's just one thing. But if you look at the diversity of Islam, you know right away there are already different interpretations of Islamic law. So what is it first? Is it meant to be a kind of flexible thing with overarching principles that apply?
Yes, by its nature, Sharia, which the term I prefer over Islamic law, because as soon as you say Islamic law, which is the English translation, you are implying that it is a law to be imposed by the state, which is contrary to its nature. Sharia is human interpretation of Muslim sources, that is the Quran and Sunnah of the Prophet. So by nature, it has to be a human interpretation. There is no way that human beings can know what is the divine will or command except through their own understanding and experience. So that human dimension of it means that there will be extreme diversity of views, there will be contextual application and practice over centuries. And now about this recent sort of almost hysteria about Sharia, this is only 10, 15, 20 years ago, and this term and this concept and Islam itself have been around for 1,400 years. So there is something about the recent events that is not to do with Sharia itself as such. It is to do with the context and the politics of the Muslim world in which Sharia is used as a means to push for particular political objectives.
All right. So does it apply? I think someone in the Judeo-Christian tradition would look at the Ten Commandments, the Talmud, the Torah, whatever code of law that one might derive from them. Does Sharia law encompass life in all of its aspects, or does it cover particular things?
Sharia encompasses everything. It is the totality of the divine guidance for human beings. And it is not a question of enforcement by the state. It's a question of compliance by believers. So by its nature, if one does not comply with Sharia voluntarily, it doesn't count. It is not religiously significant. So coercion living by Sharia, that is making it the positive law of the state, defies its nature. It defeats, it changes the nature of Sharia norm. So Sharia norms, like as you said rightly, the Ten Commandments, etiquette, social relationships, how to deal with your parents, how to deal with your spouse and communities, all of these are issues which Sharia scholars looking at the Quran and traditions of the Prophet have elaborated into normative systems. And it's always a question of you follow what you believe to be the right interpretation. Otherwise, it does not count from a religious point of view.
What do you see as some of the most common Western misconceptions about Sharia law?
The idea that it is monolithic. I mean, if you have 1.8 billion Muslims around the world, that is a quarter of humanity are Muslims. There are more than 50 countries where Muslims are the predominant majority. And then you look and see where is Sharia an issue and where is it seen to be a single monolithic command that all Muslims must obey. The very fact that we see now such violence among Muslims about what Islamic State is and what Sharia is shows that there is no single monolithic Sharia. So if Muslims are fighting over the issue, and we talk about this Sunni-Shia divide, we talk about within the Shia, within the Sunnis, obviously we are dealing with a very complex and a very historically contextual issue.
Religious fundamentalism has been the justification for heinous and appalling acts, really for the whole of humanity itself. Why are we seeing some of this in Islam now? I mean, is this a distinctive point in Islamic history?
Yeah, it is not distinctive, but it is a specific point that has been recurring through Muslim history. So every several centuries or so, you have a sort of a popular response and reaction to a feeling of disorientation, of disempowerment, of poverty and economic injustice. So whenever that happens, and when you have serious discrepancies in how people's lives are affected by the state, by ruling authorities, then you get people seeking this idealized notion of Sharia as a way out. But in the post-colonial context, for the first time now, we have a centralized, bureaucratic, coercive state on the European model of the state, which has positive law. Now, this is what is new. So, whereas in the past, people used to appeal to Sharia in a way, sort of as a moral, as an ethical way out, now, with the availability of the what they think is the possibility of a state enforcement of Sharia, it never happened in Muslim history ever. There was never a codification of Sharia in 1400 years. There was never a state enforcement of Sharia. People comply, but there was never enforcement by centralized administration. But now we have the centralized administration, which ironically happens to have come from outside the Muslim world. Hmm. But now Muslims have kept these European type states after becoming independent, and they have tried to use them in the post-colonialist context as somewhat nationalistic or socialist projects, sure, as you have seen. But now the Islamists say, since we have the state, why not use it just like you tried to use it to promote socialist ideology? Now we use it to promote Islamist ideology.
And it's interesting you should say that, because apparently during the time of the Prophet Muhammad and afterward, society was religiously diverse. You had Muslims, Jews, Zoroastrians living together peacefully. And for two-part question, in areas of the world where Muslims were in the majority, were all those people living together under Islamic law? And if it worked then, why wouldn't it work today?
It wasn't then, and it wouldn't work today. Throughout that history, you see that even if you take the Ottoman Empire as the most recent example, the Ottoman Empire ruled vast areas of Eastern Europe, Middle East, North Africa for almost 700 years. What they used to do was to create, or what happened was that they were communities of believers, what is known as millet. So you have Jewish community, Catholic community, Orthodox community, and Muslim communities, all self-governing communities according to their religious codes by their own religious leaders. So the political state authorities did not enforce a systematic sort of overarching legal system for all people who lived under the state.
And this because happened in Spain, too.
It happened in North Africa, yeah, in India for centuries. Of course, you have also Indian Muslim rulers, but non-Muslim communities living autonomously. That was the model. But I think the problem is that we have a change in the nature of the state. after the colonial period that created what people think to be a possibility of centralized administration of justice according to Sharia, which is new. And I don't believe that it can work. The point is that when you enforce Sharia norm as a state positive law, you change its nature. It is no longer Sharia norm. It becomes the political will of the state. And as such, it is ironic that when Muslims think that they are complying with the will of God, they are in fact defying the will of God by enforcing their view of Sharia coercively.
So you're saying, just to try to boil this down a bit, you're saying that folks who insist on the civil imposition of Sharia law are in fact violating Sharia law.
Absolutely. They're violating the very essence of Sharia law as a religious normative system, and they're violating the nature of Islam as a voluntary choice. It does not count unless it is voluntary.
And if you just joined us, we're talking to Emory Law Professor Abdullahi Anayim, and he has a blog called The Future of Sharia. Now back to that conversation. I want to talk kind of about this journey that got you to this stance where you are today. You wrote that it took time for you to get there. What was that journey like?
As a Muslim growing up in Sudan, where I lived the first 40 years of my life, that I was torn between my personal commitment to values as a lawyer, as a law student, to values of constitutional government, equality, social justice, and a commitment to Sharia as a religious mandate, I felt. And I came across someone who reconciled this conflict in my own person by showing that what we understand Sharia to be is, in fact, our human interpretation of it. And that as such, we can reinterpret that there is nothing eternal or immutable about human interpretations of Sharia. So through that and working with the notion of reconciling human rights and Sharia over time, but still I had the psychological barrier, which that's why I understand really where people are coming from. It's very difficult to say there's something wrong with Sharia. But it is not something wrong with Sharia. It is something wrong with human understanding of Sharia and practice of Sharia. So I struggled for a long time. And the notion of a secular state, which to me is the key question, that for many years I used to say, I would like to achieve the benefits of a secular state without a secular state. Because to me, the idea of a secular state was seen as anti-religious.
Sure.
And then eventually I came to realize that there are multiple varieties of secular states that are even more religious friendly than any state I know. And the United States is a very good example of that. So where people in the Muslim world tend to think of secularism as the French laicity, and that is really the kiss of death. I mean that if the view of secular state or secularism is the French view, then there is absolutely no chance with Muslims because it is seen as hostile and indifferent and really destructive from a religious point of view. But then when you have a state that is friendly, that creates an environment where people make their choices and live the belief they accept personally, that is a big difference. So I came along through my own studies, my own observation over time.
Real quickly, and unfortunately our time is very short here, but what would you say to somebody who says, okay, I understand that what you're saying, that we don't need a secular state imposing Sharia law, but people, and probably on your blog, they already have raised questions about some of the provisions of the law as it relates to anyone who chooses to follow it. For instance, the treatment of women and so forth. What would you say to folks who raise those sorts of questions and say, okay, how is this the kind of law with which many Americans, at least, might be comfortable?
The point is that we all live in societies and we live in interdependent societies. So it is not that everyone has a personal choice absolutely to follow what they deem to be right. Is if you have a view that you think should be applied generally, you have to persuade others through political institutions, democratic institutions. Otherwise, I think the point simply is to tell someone who is saying that, imagine being subjected to an imposition of a view that you reject, how would you feel? Mm-hmm. So it is because people tend to think majority Muslims would impose our view of Sharia. But what it is a view of Sharia that is different to yours. How would you feel living under a Shia state and you are a Sunni, or a Sunni state and you are a Shia?
Unfortunately, we have to cut it off there. That was Professor Abdullahi Anayim of the Emory University School of Law, and his blog is The Future of Sharia. You can find that on the Closer Look page at wabe.org. Thank you so much for coming in. This has been fascinating.
Yeah, and thank you for the opportunity.
I can only imagine you've gotten quite a lively discussion already on it.
Yes, I have, and I'm glad for it.
Professor, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.